Check out my new book, Coping Courageously, a heart-centered guide for navigating a loved one's illness without losing yourself. It's appropriate for you as a clinician, for your patients, and for anyone you know who has a seriously ill loved one or an aging parent. Check it out and tell a friend. Welcome to the Integrative Palliative Podcast, where we talk about integrative symptom management and physician well-being, because every physician deserves to have satisfying work, and every patient deserves an effective and joyful physician. Let's get started. Welcome to the Integrative Palliative Podcast. I'm Dr. Delia Caramonti, and today we're going to talk about compassion fatigue, because I was talking to a friend about compassion fatigue recently, and I just thought it was a topic that was important for us to chat about. And one of the questions that came up was, what is compassion fatigue, and is it the same as burnout, or is it different than burnout? And so I just want to give my take on it, and what I think are three things that we can do as clinicians, physicians who take care of people with any kind of illness, really, not just serious illness. What can we do to prevent compassion fatigue? So first, I just want to talk about what it is. Basically, compassion fatigue is the potentially negative impact on us, physicians, nurses, nurse practitioners, PAs, social workers, therapists, chaplains, etc., people who care for other people. So the impact on us of helping others. So there could be positive impacts, of course, on us for helping others, but this is specifically thinking about kind of a heavy or negative impact on us by helping others. And so that's one of the ways that it's really different than burnout. If you have uncontrolled compassion fatigue for a long time, that can increase your risk of burnout, but you could be burned out in your job and have it have nothing to do with the patient care part of your job. You could be burned out in your job because your administrative duties are too big, or your administrators are challenging to work with, or you could certainly be burned out in a job that has nothing to do with helping others. There are plenty of people who get burned out in all kinds of jobs. So compassion fatigue, uncontrolled, could be something that leads you in the direction of burnout, but it's definitely not the same thing. And I would say it's important to distinguish that, because burnout is pretty much always not good, right? We don't want to be burned out. Burnout is not a healthy state. But compassion fatigue, since it comes from helping other people, is kind of a natural part of our job. And if we're starting to feel compassion fatigue and not just compassion for people, it can be a message to us like, hey, maybe you're not taking care of yourself. Maybe you're not setting boundaries. Maybe you're doing too much. Maybe there's some stuff you've got to work on, et cetera. So it can be kind of a message to us. So I wouldn't say that compassion fatigue is something to avoid at all costs, but more I would think of it like a message when it starts to happen. So what does it feel like? It feels like, ugh, I'm tired, you know? Oh, I can't. Oh my gosh, I have to make myself go into the clinic. It's like that, but it's not as severe as burnout, which has all kinds of other components like reduced empathy and negative thinking and reduced feeling of efficacy, etc. So compassion fatigue is not that. So what are the things that we could do to decrease our chance as physicians and other clinicians of compassion fatigue? And I think there's three really important things to think about. And I'll say what they are, and then we'll talk about each one. The three things that I think are important to help reduce the risk of compassion fatigue. One is rituals. The second one is boundaries, setting boundaries. And the third one is filling our cup. So rituals, setting boundaries, and filling our cup. And so now I want to talk about all three. So the first one, rituals, I think is really important, because there's some heavy stuff that happens when we care for patients. Now, in palliative care, which is my field, obviously there's heavy stuff. People die, they try to get better from their disease, and then it gets worse instead. There's some family distress, of course, associated with disease that isn't going to get better. But palliative care is not the only place that compassion fatigue happens. It happens in all specialties, because it's not necessarily about what we do in the day. It's about how heavy it feels. So as a radiologist, if you're diagnosing people with potentially life-limiting illness, that can get heavy. If you're in primary care and you're seeing patient after patient after patient, and you don't feel like you can give enough time to each of those patients that need you, that can give you compassion fatigue. If you're in primary care and you have a bunch of patients who can't afford their medicines. And so you want to make them better, but you see the restrictions to their ability to get better. That can increase compassion fatigue. So obviously oncologists, rheumatologists with patients with chronic illness who won't necessarily get all better, there's risk for compassion fatigue in pretty much every specialty. I think that rituals help us cope with difficult things. In my practice, we did two main rituals that I think were really important for us that were appropriate for palliative care, but I think you could even use some of these things no matter what your specialty is. So the two things that we did, one was we had the image of a tree that was painted essentially on the wall. It was stencils maybe, but it was put up on the wall, large tree. And then we had little stick-on leaves. And so when a patient would die that we were taking care of, we would write their initials and sometimes something about the patient and put their leaf up on the tree. And the reason this is helpful is that it wounds the healthcare providers too when someone dies. It can get heavy. And when it happens over and over again, that can impact us. And so just having a place where we honored the people that we had taken care of that had died was meaningful to us. So we could walk by and see them and think, oh yeah, remember Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so. And it made the impact on our soul of seeing repeated deaths less painful. So that's one thing. And then the other thing that we did that I think is really important and easily adaptable to other specialties is once a month, we had our mind-body specialist lead us in about a 5, max 10 minute little ritual where she would bring a singing bowl and we would tell her the names of either our patients who had died or sometimes our patients who were really struggling or suffering. And sometimes we would add family, our own family members who were struggling. Sometimes we would add people in the world who were facing something difficult. So these were all people who were either had died or were facing something difficult and we wanted to offer support. So she would write down the names and then we would all sit with our eyes closed and she would play this beautiful singing bowl, which has very resonant sound and you would feel it through the room. And as she was doing that, she would speak the people's names. And it allowed all of us to have a reverent time to send healing energy and wishes to those people. And it was really healing for us too, really healing for us too. So I strongly recommend that you consider whatever your practice is doing something like that. Even in primary care, most patients probably aren't dying, but some of them might be. But also many of them are suffering in various ways. And so you might have a ritual like that where you call to mind the people who are suffering and send warmth and healing energy and healing presence in their direction. You could say a little ritual or prayer or statement to yourself before you walk into every room. You could do some sort of ritual as a team. If you check in with your team in the morning before you start seeing patients, you could have a little healing intention for the patients that you're going to see. You could check in at the end of the day to send some healing intention to each other. So it really doesn't matter what you do, but the idea of ritual to acknowledge the heavier parts of this work and being witness to other people's pain, I think is very powerful. So if you're not currently doing any kind of ritual in your practice, I strongly recommend that you think of one. Just pick one. It really totally doesn't matter what it is. Just pick a thing that you do, either individually or as a group, that either honors the patients that you have who are suffering or honors you as a group, you the healers as a group. The other kind of rituals that can be helpful are letting go rituals. So if I saw a very difficult patient, I would often shake like I was trying to dry my hands, you know, shake my arms and hands to like get the yuck off. Some people wipe their arms like they're trying to get something off their arms. Some people throw water on their face. Some people rub their hands together. Some people might say a little prayer or a statement to themselves if they've just had a challenging encounter. Some people use affirmations. So pick something, one that honors your patience or your healing presence, and another one that is a letting go, like get rid of the yuck kind of ritual. So that's rituals. Number two way to help reduce the risk of compassion fatigue is boundaries. And by boundaries, I mean, different things for different people, but the basic idea is check in with yourself about what do you need. So sometimes we feel compassion fatigue because we're giving, 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 and there's no limit. Like we let every patient have as much time as they need, so we're late for every patient and we don't get our notes done, and then there's 3 hours of charting to do at the end of the day after your patients are done. That's a recipe for compassion fatigue. So check in with yourself. What kind of boundary could you set that would reduce the depletion feeling of the work that you're doing? So maybe that's starting every visit with, we have 15 minutes today together. What are the two most important things that you want to talk about, for example? Or maybe it's setting a little timer 5 minutes before the end of the visit so you can hear it and tell the patient, okay, we've got five more minutes. Let's make sure we get to the things that are most important to you. Or maybe it's having your nurse or MA get you out of a room if you're spending way too much time and they know you're getting behind. Or maybe it's working with a coach who helps people be more efficient in the office. Or maybe it's setting boundaries with coworkers and saying, I'm so sorry, but I can't take on more committee work or that project you want me to do. I don't have the bandwidth for that right now. Or maybe it's taking some vacation. Or deciding that you're going to decrease the number of days that you work and telling your supervisor or boss, this is what I need to do. So some way of setting boundaries so that you are not giving out more than you have. And then number three way to prevent compassion fatigue, you'll hear me talk about this a lot, is to keep your cup full, your gas tank full, your battery full. But I like to think of it as a cup, your cup full. That's your physical cup, emotional, spiritual cup, because when we get empty and depleted, we don't have as much to give. And if we still keep giving anyway, that's when we can get really exhausted. That's when we can get compassion fatigue and even burnout. So we've talked about it before, but what are some of the things that you can do to fill up your cup? So that's different for everybody, right? And remember, there's the equation of the stuff on the bottom that's emptying your cup. What are you doing that's emptying your cup? And then what are the things on the top that you could put into your cup to fill it up? And so sometimes it's more of an issue that it's draining too fast, like you're doing too much, you're beating yourself up, you have anxiety or depression that's uncontrolled, you have all kinds of negative cognitive distortions, maybe you're not sleeping enough. So what are the things that are emptying your cup that you could work on? And then what are some more things you could do to fill up your cup, which is different for everybody? Could you sleep more? Could you start seeing a therapist? Could you get your depression managed? Could you do art projects? Could you take a pottery class? Could you talk with friends more? Could you exercise more? Could you spend time outside? Could you spend time with your dogs? Could you do yoga? It's different for everybody, but the idea being when we intentionally keep our cup full, we have more to give and it doesn't feel so depleting. Okay, so those are the three ways I want you to think about reducing your risk for compassion fatigue, having rituals, two kinds, honoring rituals, and then letting go rituals for when things are yucky, setting boundaries after you check in with yourself about where am I leaking? Where am I giving too much that I need to set a boundary? And then the third one is intentionally filling up your cup so that you have more to give. Okay, that's it for today. For homework, check in with yourself about where you think you are on the compassion fatigue scale. Do you feel like, no, that's not a problem? Or do you feel like, oh my gosh, yeah, like it feels heavy. The impact of caring for all of these patients is feeling heavy for me. So that's compassion fatigue. And if that's going on for you, you really want to do all three of these things. If it's not happening, then these are preventative. So the one I would encourage you to do that maybe people don't think about as much for homework is a ritual. See if you can think of ideally two different rituals, one that honors your patient that you're about to see or the patients that you see that are struggling, and one that you can use to let go of the yuck when you have a difficult encounter with a patient, someone who's angry or mad at you, or someone who isn't doing well, or a medical error, or something that's feeling heavy and yucky. What is a ritual that you can do to let go? And then what is a ritual that you can do to honor? So that's your homework for the week. Think about it. Ideally, you would think about it and then implement it. But if implementing it feels like too much for right now, at least think about it. Like if I were going to do rituals at work, these would be the two rituals that I would do. And remember, it can be you alone or it could be your team. whichever works best for you. So go do it. Go pick a ritual. And I'd love it if you tagged me on social media or sent me an email and told me what it was. I think the more we do these things and speak them out loud, the more we help each other to feel as good as we can as physicians in this work and still give all the care we want to give to people, but without depleting ourselves. Thanks so much for being here. I love it that you listen. Let somebody else know about the podcast, and I'll see you next Thursday. Bye. This podcast was brought to you by the Integrative Palliative Institute, dedicated to whole person care for people with serious illness using all the tools that work. If you've always thought that there was a better way to practice medicine, you're right, and you've found your people. So help spread the word. Send this episode to a friend or colleague, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and reach out anytime and come learn with me. You can find more information and training programs at integrativepalliative.com.